You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Sherrod Ellis.
Hello, everyone.
So here we are again today. Hope everybody is doing well. Neil will be with us next week. So it's the Just Us Department. Get it? Just us Department. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just us. So, anyway, hoping everybody had a good week out there, and I want to make a special announcement. I know this it won't be a surprise to you because you follow my social media, but I'm picked up a coaching assignment with a UFC fighter, so he'll be on the show here in a couple of weeks. A young man started his career at Iowa State as a wrestler, and kind of reminds me of Sherrod a little bit, how he kind of came in there as an athlete and transitioned over from wrestling to mixed martial arts, and now a UFC contract fighter, and he's an undefeated at this time, so I'm glad I have him. Oh, he's 3-0. You know, I could take credit for that. No, I won't do that. But we'll talk about his career, and we've done some mindset work already and some other types of stuff. Obviously more on the life coaching side than on the I'm not coaching how to fight. I'm not doing that, y'all. No way. But so be looking forward to our show here on that in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a fun time, and we might bring him back on from time to time to kind of share his insights as well. I always like that fluid process, get people like, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm doing, and they come back maybe 4, 5, 6 months later, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm doing, and that way, you know, our listeners and viewers get to see how that process unfolds. So with that in mind, I know last week we had talked about coaching adolescents and looking at one is the home-based work and how important that is to see the clients in their natural habitat, environment, whatever, and not only how they interact with siblings and parents, etc., and family members, and folks that may be in the household. So definitely these coaching assignments can take on a systems perspective, a family systems perspective. And I know that's a little bit different with coaching, right? Because a lot of time in coaching, like, okay, you're my client and my work is just with you. And that's not the case, you know. Many times, even with a lot of my adult clients, I would meet with their spouses or significant others or family members a little bit as part of the coaching process, the 360, as they call it. So anyway, on that similar vein, we're going to talk about the importance. I guess we'll first talk about the importance of working with the parents, okay? The parents of the client, adolescent client. Sometimes it's the parents of a client that's in their 20s, could be even mid-late 20s. If you're in 2021, we get a lot of clients that are close to 30 and still possibly in their parents' home and stuff like that. But anyway, the idea of talking to the parents. Okay, so tell us a little bit about why that's important, you know, and sometimes that can even be some of the origins of the issues. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it does present a challenge sometimes, especially when the parents are not on the same page, you know, especially when they come from different backgrounds and different cultures and different beliefs and things like that, how to handle situations, particularly when it's making tough decisions. How do we come together and parent? You know, what's our parenting style? So it's very important. I'm finding in a situation I'm currently in with the family is that a lot of the confusion is with how the parents have put themselves in a position to be split. The father's a little passive. and the mother is very assertive. I mean, she says what she means what she say, very structured, both very educated parents, good background financially, so they are both on that same level. But however, when it comes down to confronting and involving and engaging with the child, they have a lot of differences.
Okay. And that's usually the case, right? Mom and dad, and you could flip a coin, you know, there's going to be differences between mom and dad, and one's going to have one type of parenting style, and the other one's going to be a little different parenting style. And if those differences are close to 180 degrees different, wow, man, you're going to have some issues there. And what happens is, right, is that the child, in this case, will capitalize on his parents' different parenting styles and use that as a wedge to drive between parents and other family members to gain control of the whole household. And this is what I call the tail wagging the dog. Yeah. And so it's an easy trap to fall into. This is easier said than done in terms of getting in there and rerouting this. It takes a little bit of time. It's going to take compromise, I would guess. Probably going to take some compromise on both parents' behalves.
Yes, sir.
And then there's going to be consistency. So, look, I think the most important thing, one of the most important things for our youth clients is that, you know, I mean, either parents or caregivers, but whoever is in charge of that individual's care, if you will, that they stand together, okay? If he and I are working on a case and we may have different ideas about how to go about it, but at the end of the day, he and I are going to come together, right, and do what's best overall for the client, and then we're going to iron out what techniques we're going to do. Now that rarely happens, but sometimes it's a timing and coordination issue. So can you categorically talk about this hypothetical family, but like what kinds of things are you going to do categorically with the parents to kind of help them get over their conflict?
Absolutely. One of the interventions that I implemented was getting them to identify some of the childhood traumas and things that they were exposed to, getting them to kind of get familiar with those and revisiting those and seeing how were you taught by your parents to handle tough situations, you know, from the dad's perspective and as well as from the mother's perspective, so that they can kind of iron out and kind of see, all right, let our traumas meet in the middle of the ring, like you talk about the UFC fighters. So we got to let the traumas get in the ring and kind of duke it out a little bit.
Was it their trauma or was it their kind of their coping style?
Could be a combination of both, you know what I mean? Because definitely with your coping style, how did I learn how to cope with a situation, particularly coming from my spouse? And then, you know, again, what was the pattern, my fact that I was exposed to, you know? Okay. In one of the cases, you know, father, you know, his father was very much successful and, you know, didn't really put too much into the nuts and bolts of raising a man and saying, hey, here's how we facilitate, here's how we do things, here's how we solve issues. It's just your success with your money in school is okay.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, mom was taught more well-rounded and, hey, we work and we sit down and we kind of work this thing out together as a family. And when it comes down to approaching, you know, our children, and we do this together. Right. And we keep each other in the loop. So a little different there. You know, a little different. Mental illness on one side, I think, alcohol on another. So okay. Just, like you said, challenging. And like I say, trauma and situations growing up kind of clashing.
I really like the fact that you were looking at the kind of primary process issue. Like, and that takes, you know, a lot of guts to, you know, like ask that person, how is it that you learned how to solve problems from an early age? Who taught you? how to do that. What was the morals, values, and beliefs behind those type of coping things? You know, what is, you know, like you said, what is parenting to you? What is being a man to you? What is being a woman to you? Or what does it mean to raise a young lady? What does it mean to raise a young man? What does that mean to you? What does that look like? How do you know when you've completed the mission, or that you've raised a good, if you will, young lady or young man? You know what I mean? What does that look like as a parent? And I know as a parent myself, I have fallen into traps. Man, it's almost embarrassing to say that. You'd think you'd expect better out of me, but I've fallen into traps where I was more focused on what they've done, their output, like school. Are you in school? Are you out of school? Or, you know, what are you doing with a job? Are you employed or not employed? Are you in school or out of school? How are you doing in school? What kind of friends do you have? What are you doing? What are you doing on your free time? And just really kind of looking at that output. And sometimes that's productive as a parent and it's necessary, but sometimes I had been fixated on output and then the child thinks that you love them, but all you really care about is what I'm, you know, bringing to the table, or my grades, or where I'm at in my status in society. And so, man, you know, and that's easy. And sometimes we, depending on the culture we're in, we can fall into those traps and we lose the baby in the bathwater. You know, we lose the person in the wake of all these accomplishments and stuff. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, and there's a difference between being independent and being an individual. And a lot of times when we think about being an individual, I mean, I'm still divided, I'm still with a family, whatever, but I'm also still an individual. And so I need to learn how to be comfortable with myself, develop a sense of inner peace, and knowing how to navigate through life, you know, versus being independent, where it's just, well, we know independent variable. I don't need anybody else. And we know as human beings, we weren't created to where we do things on our own. So it's just learning the difference between being independent versus being an individual. And sometimes when parents and people get together in a relationship, well, they forget about how to relate.
Sorry about that, y'all.
That's all right. They should be. I got to put the spotlight on that.
Cut the light open back there. It's kind of robbing you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to turn. I'm going to get this here. Y'all, you keep going.
Yeah. So you definitely want to make sure that you keep your individualism when you go into a relationship. And in the beginning, how many of us really break down the root of that word relationship? Some of us go right to the ship. And that's why the ship sinks a lot of times, because we didn't relate before we got to the ship. So working on little things like that with this family, that's the approach that I take. I'm always primarily saying with families that I work with adolescents is that I have to work with the parents as well. So everybody's on one page, one accord, and everybody's growing at the same time. And we're not going through the situation, we're growing through the situation.
So. We're growing through it. Yes, sir. And I tell you, you see what I mean? That's just why we got such diversity here right now in terms of, you know, skill set and stuff like that, man. That's really good, man. That's perfect. You know, and it's hard because people are going to grow at different paces, at different rates. Everybody, there is no, and that's, man, you know what, man, that's the thing about recovery, right? Because everybody's recovery is just a little bit different. It's not the same for everybody. And I know some of the cognitive people give the 12-step thing some beef, because the 12 steps are the 12 steps. The meetings are the meetings. Those are always the same. But I think the journey and the issues are different. And so, so I don't, you know, but with this, you know, and with coaching, we're able to access and we're able to help people that aren't to the point of a 12-step meeting yet. They're not to the point of the doors of an IOP. You know, they're not to the point of a full-on family crisis. But we can kind of get in there before that happens as independent variables or possible change agents. to facilitate change. We're not changing them, but they're working on changing them themselves. So I thought that was a good thing. Now, so let's talk about mentoring. Still in this vein, with this family you speak of, how is that a good example of mentoring, maybe versus coaching? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think they both run hand in hand. However, you know, the mentoring does take on a little bit more direct approach, you know, to where I can be more directive, whereas when we're doing the coaching, it's more, hey, I'm allowing you to lead the way. I'm allowing you to answer these questions and navigate this thing, which is a good, that also is a good approach as well. But sometimes when you're dealing with adolescents, you know, sometimes you have to have a little bit of that mentor mentality of kind of setting some parameters and kind of giving them a direction, because sometimes they don't have it. You know, sometimes they're so caught up in the moment, in the situation, and they're so used to manipulating the situation that they can't see the forest for the cover of the trees. Right. So that mentoring approach is more hands-on. It's more setting the stage and, you know, kind of prompting them a little bit. Not too much, but just kind of prompting, you know, the direction that you would like to go.
Exactly. And, you know, now that you're talking about this, I'm doing a similar thing with the client and working with the parents and actually mentoring the parents. Literally, I'll give you a trigger. We've always taken more, both of them in this case, taken more non-confrontational approaches. But now that our son is 17 years old, in the height of his adolescent individuality, almost rebellion type of stuff. And now, you know, here we are, and we're not used to applying negative consequences. We're not used to setting some of those boundaries that, if, hey man, this is not negotiable. If you don't do X and it's harmful to yourself or your health, then we're going to apply a consequence. So I'm actually helping the parents apply consequences based on these behaviors, you know, because otherwise, if they don't, this young man is going to manipulate his environment and control his environment as best he can. And, you know, sometimes people use honey to manipulate, but a lot of times people use vinegar, right? And they use, you know, negative reinforcement to get their way, because sometimes bad attention is still attention. And so, and they'll use that, and it's kind of counterintuitive, but we see that a lot, man, in these youth cases. So, the mentoring, I find myself mentoring parents sometimes, where there's this, if you will, gap of knowledge or gap of skill set for a particular thing. And look, man, again, nobody's perfect. We're not perfect. No, we're parents. We make mistakes. And we have gaps in our own skill set. So we're not by any means saying that, you know, look at us, we're per butt. You know, it is when you have the problem defined and you have your client literally telling you, we have a problem, help us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
then we're here to help. So so the mentoring is more directive. It is more suggestive. But you can still, I don't want to say coachify, but you can say, hey, what have you guys tried in the past? Have you guys tried anything that has worked? What has worked, if anything? Okay. If not, would you be open to hearing some new ideas? So you kind of broach it that way. Would you be open to hearing? I have some suggestions that I know of that have worked. Would you be interested in hearing those? And then the client says, yes, we would. See how you're just kind of checking and checking to make sure that you don't overrun them, right? You don't run them down with your knowledge and experience, strength, and hope. You know, oh, yeah, man. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. You know, what you need to do is do a four-step. Hey, man, no. Wait, hold on a minute. So we're going to let this client, look, I have an idea. Would you like to hear it? Yes, okay. Have you thought about trying this? No. Well, let's talk about A. A is this. Okay. What are your thoughts about doing A? Is that something you'd be comfortable with? Or is there anything about A that brings you anxiety or fear.
What makes you uncomfortable?
What makes you uncomfortable. Right. So, okay, well, let's look at B. You know, we got strategy B. How do you feel about B? And so it kind of go through some of these strategies, but very slowly, very meticulously,
in layman terms.
Of course, and that's, he's my translator. But no, man, I mean, but yeah, and like I said, very succinct, clear, and obviously non-clinical terminology, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, absolutely. And again, that's something that sadly I came up in that clinical world and default to all too often. I have to remind myself not to do that. But that's why Sherrod Neal, don't do that. But that's mm-hmm. Sherrod's world partly clinical.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
But think
about it though, Mr. Bruce, Mr. Cameron, that is a beautiful thing to at least have that experience and that knowledge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, because like you said, if you look in today's time, there is a lot of LMSWs, LCSWs, LPCs that are transitioning into the coaching. You know, and that's mm-hmm. that's a good hat, two hats to have, because again, you can back off a lot and kind of give yourself a little bit of a mental and physical break of all the paperwork mm-hmm. and all of those kind of things, and also gives you other strategies and points of views and perspectives that you can use, right. You know, with that coaching. Mm-hmm. You know, I really enjoy the coaching aspect as well, and the mentor, right? I enjoy both, man, because having the luxury of having all three, having that knowledge, you know, on the master's level with the with the psychology and the counseling, man, it plays a major part in my approach, man, because I'm diverse from those perspectives. So
you have more master's degrees than I do. Yeah, you got, don't you? You got two, right?
Two.
So you know, I mean, the same, yeah. So, yeah, man, you go to Starbucks like you say. I'm good here, man. Just kidding. Man, we talk about going to Starbucks. And Sherrod made the run today, so it's always a fun
white flat.
Yeah, the Venti flat white. Brought to you by Venti flat white. No joke there. No poem. So yeah. So on the mentoring side, and that let me get the camera here, man. I know I gotta get a better camera. The coaching and the mentoring allows that, right? We don't have to be institution bound. We can go to the person's home. We can meet the person where they at a restaurant. We can actually eat a meal with a client. We can interact with a client in various environments, and sometimes that coaching, if it involves social skills, I keep bringing her up, and I need to bring her on the show, man. I have an eating disorder coach. She's formerly a licensed therapist, but actually goes to the grocery store, helps the person buy the food, helps them understand how to cut the meat, and how, you know.
Step by step.
Right. And how to eat. I probably need her. I've gained about 10 pounds here in the last couple of weeks. I'm living too large. Anyway, but I'm just saying, right? But having that person assist me while I'm eating a meal or going to the grocery store, making good choices, et cetera, meal preparation, everything. So anyway, that's what coaching and mentoring allows for, is that kind of closer personal touch. But also allows it to be either non-directive or it can be a little bit more directive. And that's where mentoring kind of comes in. So kind of the teaching perspective. So all right, so what else we got about parents? So we have their parenting style, where they've learned their parenting style.
Communication.
Okay, communication.
What's your communication style? How do you listen? I mean, what are you listening for? You know, I mean, that's a big one. You know, are you listening to defend yourself? Or are you listening to understand what's being communicated? And sometimes I've noticed in some of the families that I work with, one or the other, or maybe both, are just listening to respond. It's just attack. And it's like, well, it's your, you know, it's on you. You do this or you do that. And then it's like, hello, hello, are you guys paying attention?
That's right, that's right.
You know, get them to step off of that dysfunctional merry-go-round and communicate.
Exactly.
Don't be nervous. So if your hammer, just happen to have one of these, your hammer, everything you see is a nail, right? And so sometimes we do that in parenting. I would do that when my kids were in high school, because everything was about, how's your grades? Did you do your homework? We got this email from the teacher. What about this? What about that? Right? And all I was doing is this all day. Boom, boom, boom. Hammering stuff about school and grades and performance. Then what about this? What about your college application? What about blah? I mean, it's just kind of nonstop, man. I had to take a step back and go like, man, every time I have interactions with these kids, it's a problem-based interaction. It's like, what are you not doing?
Right.
Right? And this is me now. This is speaking for me. What aren't you doing? I have to be, it's like, man, you got to praise your kids. You're like, hey, man, you're doing so good. I'm so proud of you. And I try to do that now. It's easier now that they're older. And some of that direct pre-18-year-old pressure is off, if you will. But I still, you know, man, I'm so proud of you and proud of what you're doing, and just want you to live a happy and productive life. But certainly, you know,
and youth of today, look at all the external factors and things that are happening. You know, just with social media in itself, look at the exposure. Look at how mm-hmm. things that they're being exposed to today on mm-hmm. just regular basic television. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. listen to the radio. I mean, the movies that are being produced now. I mean, music, movies, commercials. I mean, so there are a lot of challenges out there for parents in today's time. And if you come from a different generation, different era, and now you're not familiar, you're not in tune with what's going on today's station.
Man, or the internet, you know?
Internet,
yeah. I mean, I used to think, I used to think I was all hip and stuff, and man, there's stuff on the internet now. It's just like, hey, you hear about this? It just moves so fast. Mm-hmm. This site, what about this site? This site, this site. So, you know, have a little wave here of folks. Several folks get caught up in online gambling at a young age. You know why? Mm-hmm. Because they don't have to go to Vegas anymore and get your bookie now, man. You can do that stuff. You can gamble online and VPNs and different places, and now with cryptocurrency and just, man, you know, you can have your own operation of whatever, you know, based on that. So I don't want to get too deep off into that, but it's like, wow, because, you know, you ask these kids how they spend their time. I'm researching this and doing this and doing this. And it's like, my gosh, the landscape has just changed so much. You know, it's changing all the time, but,
and think about what you think about, like you say, with that, with the YouTube.
Okay, yeah.
And how all these young people that are struggling mm-hmm. in the world of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they research their drug of choice, and man, they know just as much as the doctors, if not more.
Oh, yeah.
So when the parents try to interact with them, they're breaking things down, and the parent is flying over the parent's head. Like, well, I don't know that terminology.
Right.
Exactly. You don't know it, so how can you tell me about it?
Right.
Then they have to come get somebody like Mr. Cameron to kind of break that stuff down for them, you know?
I know, right?
Scary.
This guy was getting medicine. It's kind of interesting. I was in another state recently. The guy was trying to get some stuff for his symptoms. And he went to one of these dispensaries, right? And so the dude was... So the guy at the dispensary saying, yeah, man, we got this flower, blah, 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 flower. This guy I was with was thinking, like, something in the field bloom. I was, no, man, that's you smoking. It's smoking the weed. It's the flower. Oh, okay. It's like, no. And so he couldn't even distinguish between tinctures, flour, dabs, gum, you know, and all this other stuff. It's like, oh, my God. I wouldn't know that stuff either. You know, but anyway, like you said, just that dispensary 101 nomenclature that they use. And so, you know, that's a whole other thing. Right,
and that's a challenge on us.
I mean,
we have to make sure we, you know, empower ourselves with educating ourselves on the lingo today and what's the terminology that they're using in the streets to camouflage when they're talking to their parents or in front of their parents. So in front of us.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, this stuff you can get in the mail, stuff you can get. I mean, that, this stuff, man, is, you know, oh, well, it's just, it's harmless. Like, man, send it direct, those THC stuff, those cookies and edibles, you can take in a huge dose real quick, real easy, and you're tripping.
Yeah.
I mean, you're tripping like hallucinogenic style, old school tripping. I'm talking about for 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 8 hours. You know, so you can say it's God's herb all you want, but man, that stuff is for real. A lot of people get, you know, oh, well, it's legal, so it's good. No, it's not good. That's, you know, well, I'm going to get on a hallucinogenic tear here.
Right.
That's why you really can't dose hallucinogens, and that's why they're illegal, because, right? This person may feel nothing, and the next person is seeing an octopus on the windshield, right? On the same thing. You think, how is that such a differential effect? Well, that, because it's a hallucinogenic drug. All right, I digress. Sorry, folks. So where were we? Talking about parents. And
yeah, just the importance of educating and empowering our parents and coaching and mentoring. And then also, you know, like you say, you never want to also take out therapy. You never want to do that because therapy is the where the rubber meets the road, deep down, where you can kind of talk about those traumas that are still present in your life. I call them landmines, things that are beneath the surface that are exploding. And when the explosion is happening, yeah, you're blowing up. But guess what? The shrapnel coming from you and your dysfunction is hitting your loved ones and the people that you love. So, man, it's just very important to just keep everybody on one accord and have that access to therapy and not think that, okay, mentoring or coaching is the only thing that's going to work. You got to have a whole community of services, man, to help individuals with their stuff.
Indeed. You know, a shortcut, you guys, a little tip here, particularly with youth and probably 65% of male clients, is look at their anger.
Absolutely.
Look at that man or young man's anger. Okay? Most of the time, the anger is that little triangle that's above the waterline, sticking out in the open. But underneath that, it's like a whole iceberg of other emotions, fear, anxiety, not unworthiness, no efficacy, whatever, shame, guilt, right? But what we see and the parents see or the school administrators see is the anger.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes if you can get there as a coach or a mentor, do it. But sometimes that's where the therapy and counseling comes in and let's look below the waterline of all the other issues and emotions that you're harboring, right? So that anger comes out,
and that's what therapy allows to happen and take place. Where coaching and mentoring does, I mean, we're not licensed, we're not, you know, trained a lot to be able to do that, to handle that level of interaction. But that's a different level when you're talking about dealing with the surface.
Right now, that's the luxury of having that. Here we are, folks. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties. here. I might have hit something. I don't know. I was going to say something fairly profound, too. Oh, yeah. What I was saying was, Sherrod back in there. What I was going to say is that, yeah, I have that counseling license or whatever, but you got to be really careful. Okay, because underneath the anger, like I said, there's other emotions, but and there could be guilt and shame. And the cousin, and the big cousin, that is trauma. Trauma. Okay. And that trauma can be physical, emotional, sexual. And that's where coaching and mentoring, like you said, you pull that emergency brake up real slow. Right? You pull up that emergency brake and then you make that referral to whatever therapist, licensed therapist, that you can. Because you don't want to be in a position where you think you can take on a person's trauma. Even if you have all the empathy in the world and all the best intentions in the world, that stuff comes out, you got to be there to catch it and then do something with it. And it's one thing to catch it, but you can't hold it.
Right. And you can do more damage than you do good.
You can do more damage than you do good. That's right.
So it's important that as coaches and mentors that we understand that fine line between, you know, helping and hurting.
I'm not going to get to it.
Yeah, we have to make sure that we understand that there's a fine line between, very thin, very fine line between, you know, mentoring and coaching and therapy.
Yes, it's coming up this week.
Stay in our lane.
Okay, this is not a shameless plug for these folks, but trauma treatment certification workshop. I don't know if that'll be backwards when this play. What? You know, it is just. We got to get some training on it. But anyway, everybody, the older I get, the more I realize that everybody has some kind of trauma. I shouldn't say everybody, but it's pretty close to everybody.
Even if it's no more than exposure. Remember, they just added that.
Right.
You know, being exposed to something.
And then you got to factor in maybe something that he and I might not see as trauma, but it's trauma to our client. Right? They see his trauma. Right?
Yeah.
I would be like, I used to do these evaluations for the VA. And they have these Desert Storm guys. I look at the DD-214 and see if they actually saw anything. And this dude was like, man, I need 100% service-connected disability for benefits because I had to pack a duffel bag of a dude that died 3 miles down the road. I'm like, I mean, you came up on the streets. I was in prison, would get, you know, shanked or whatever. I'm like, you packed a duffel bag for a dude. You didn't see the body or nothing, right? No. He's all right. But you know what? Well, I wasn't his therapist. Thank goodness, right? At that moment, I was less than, you know, like, how is that trauma? You know, now that I'm older and wiser, I would probably explore that more with a person. But anyway, right? So what's trauma to them is and we got to start where the client's at.
That's right.
Again, that guy wasn't a client, so don't pay him. So we got the anger on the top, all these other issues on the bottom. Yeah, some of that's going to be anxiety. Some of that's going to be depression. Some of that might be trauma. You know, the old adage with the youth client is that anger is depression turned outward. Right?
Yep.
And then depression would be anger toward inward. Turned. Anger turned inward.
Self-sabotage. How could I allow myself to be caught up like this? How did I just let my guards down?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't deserve to live. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are some of the things that you get exposed to when that depression takes place. And then, like you say, with that anger, you know, I hit the wall or punch a pillow or kick the dog or whatever you may do. But it's very serious. And when it's like that and it elevates to that level and escalates to that, as a coach or a mentor, that's when you have to hit the pause button and say, hey, At this point, man, it's out of my lane, out of my professional, you know, scope. And I'm afraid.
Here's an easy example. It happened right here. Coaching client comes in wearing a Nazi uniform with an SS with an SS helmet. You can't make this up, man. The dude comes in. He was in the waiting room, scared everybody out of the waiting room. Comes in with a German SS uniform. Guy's in his early, mid-30s. I'm just trying to be cool about it. Like, hey, man, you know what? How you doing today? You doing all right? Okay, well, what? Tell me what's going on. Man, that's a German outfit, right? Yeah, and he went this whole thing, and then he... And then just about the point where he said that he was working for Josef Mengele or somebody, I'm like, yeah, this guy needs a referral for a psychiatrist. He's floridly psychotic. You know what I mean? And at that point, everything stops. You know, I try to be there. I let him go back in the back, smoke some cigarettes outside, because nearly every psychotic person smokes. Or they benefit from the nicotine short term from smoking because of psychosis. But yeah. So man, that was one and done. He was seen by a psychiatrist. The guy came back in plain clothes 2 or 3 months later, saying, "Yeah, I apologize for showing up in the full regalia or whatever." Okay, but look, okay, that's one example of psychosis where everything stops right there. But when somebody's suicidal or acutely suicidal, or trauma comes out, when they're making a huge disclosure on sexual or whatever trauma. Hey, I mean, if you're a reportable person, make sure you make that report to a CPS or an agency. But then the next step is a competent therapist, clinician to handle that.
Absolutely.
That's not a trauma.
Uh-huh. Save yourself a big headache.
Yeah,
and lawsuit,
yeah.
Potentially.
I worked in a women's prison for 6 years, and we did these alpha theta. We did old school neurofeedback, the Jean Peniston protocol for addiction treatment, alpha theta brainwave training, this and that. Part of that is to use hypnotic procedures to get the person to a level where they were in that area between sleep and awakeness, okay? So kind of in a hypnotic trance so that this alpha theta computer stuff could work. I'm going to tell you, and this is women's federal prison, at least 6 of 10 of those ladies would have trauma that they were suppressing, I mean, literally come out through this hypnagogic state. And I'd be like, whoa, right? And then, you know, we'd have to process it, what happened, what do you recall? Sometimes they remember it, sometimes they don't, like, hey, man, we're going to just refer you down the hall to Dr. Smith or whatever, you know, one of our trauma specialists to deal with that. And so it's like, because if you're sitting on something, it's going to come out, you know. It's going to come out sooner or later. But man, you got to get that help to deal with it now that it's out or it's coming out or whatever. Or this is something you've spent all your life or much of your life suppressing, right? And it's caused you not to function like you could in your normal, like you could, because you have this true trauma over here that requires psychological or other types of treatment, you know. And you think, well, I'll just use a coach. I don't need to go see one of those people. I'll just get it done with a coach, right? And that's good. That's a good try. But sometimes you might need those other people, right, Sharon? Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. And there shouldn't be any shame in the fact that, you know what, I need a little extra help. I need a little extra assistance. I need to be able to process on a deeper level. Because sometimes, you know, if you're a coach or you're a mentor, and if you don't have the knowledge in the background or the clinical background, you know, you right, man, I may think that I'm doing good,
yeah,
but I'm really doing harm.
Right. I know that a lot of people want to have paid sessions. You want to have money. You want to make money. I get that. Mm-hmm. But, man, got to have the integrity, have the honesty to know what your lane is and stay in it. If you got to make the referral. You know, look, I have a license and all this other stuff, and I refer all the time. I could probably see some of that some of those things. But, you know, I just have the wisdom and discernment to know that somebody better than me, way better than me, and probably more trained than I in that particular issue can handle that issue. And I'm not going to, I'll be, like you said, I'll be doing that person a disservice. Look, handle that issue, get the help that you need. And look, when you get back to an area that coaching or whatever I do, or whatever Sherrod does, is in the band, come back and see us. But you know, right now, we got to make this referral right now and get, you know, get some of that fixed up for you. Or you get that, you know, get that in a better place. Sometimes it's medicine, sometimes it's other types of work. EMDR, trauma counseling, that type of stuff. And so, or psychotic, you know. Sherrod and I took somebody to a psych hospital. He thought he was having lunch with us. And, he had lunch, but we had to make a little detour. And to this day, I mean, the young man was angry at the moment, as a lot of folks are when your cells are flooded with dopamine. Man, years down the line, he was grateful. As a matter of fact, I talked to him, and he might be coming on the show.
Oh, okay.
I talked to him, and he was making some amends to, you know, anyway, sometimes people find you on social media and throw a DM at you, even though they're not your friend, you know what I'm saying? And he's like, he lit me up one night, man, like a Christmas tree. It making me blush. That takes a lot. He was something in some guys for that. I'm so sorry. And all this and that. So we might have that on the show here. Okay. So anyway, what we're saying is, yeah, stay, you know, have integrity, stay in your lane, know when to refer. But you know, and then that's going to happen sooner or later in everybody's career.
That's right. Know your limitations.
Yeah. And just be ready for that and expect it. Because it's going to happen. So, how are we doing on time? 2 minutes. Any wrap-up thoughts there, Mr. Ellis?
Oh, yeah. For me, I would just, to all my listeners out there, like I said, I just encourage that everyone just continue to empower yourself with knowledge and just continue to research and study and do all the things that you can to just be a great, healthy, therapeutic support for the individuals that we serve. Because these individuals are worth the investment. They're worth you hearing. And they deserve to be heard. So just give them a chance, give them a shout, and, you know, watch what can happen when they rebound and get themselves back on track. They too can become great individual professionals in this, and coaches, and maybe therapists someday. Because, you know, wounded warriors make the best therapists, because we've been there.
That's right.
Thank you all for listening.
How can folks find you on your site?
If you want to reach out to me, www.nlfmfortworth.org. www.nlfmfortworth.org.
All right. So, I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And look, folks, we're on Apple Podcasts. We're on the LA Talk Radio archive site. I think we're on iHeart Radio and iHeart Media. So we're so grateful that we've been picked up by those. And we appreciate you watching, listening. I know we got off track. We get off track every week, but I think we went into a pretty good track, even though it was off track. But still thought it was relevant. So folks, yeah, come, you know, look us up on those other sites. We're on Facebook at the Concierge Coaches Show. We're also on Instagram, the Concierge Coaches. There's some underscores, I think, between the words there. And so until next time, you know, everybody have a blessed and safe week out there. And we're going to have another exciting show next week here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. So stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you here next week. Take care.
Take care, everybody.
See you.
See you the next time.
See you next time.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.